Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio.
Welcome, everybody. You are tuned in to Soul Inspirations. I'm your host, Christine Key of C, as always bringing you the music, magic, and message that matters. Soul Inspirations is a live and podcast talk radio music show where I chat with musicians from all over the world, from every music genre at every point in their career. We talk about their journey, their inspiration, and in doing so, hopefully you're uplifted and inspired to discover and pursue your life's purpose and passion. That's what life is all about, living your passion. So we are going to go ahead and get right into tonight's show. Usually I do a 60-minute podcast, but tonight we're going to have Ken Tamplin here for about 30 minutes. And Ken Tamplin is most known as a Christian heavy metal musician. He's also an amazing guitarist, composer, producer, and a vocal coach. He's also the owner of Ken Tamplin Vocal Academy. He's a four-time Dove Award winner, and he's scored music from major feature films such as Perfect Storm, Inspector Gadget, numerous television series. Some of you may remember Melrose Place, 90210, X-Files, Baywatch, to name a few. Ken's also an amazing humanitarian. One of his efforts included spearheading a project that benefited victims of genocide in Sudan through his Make Me Your Voice CD project. So I am so blessed and privileged to have you here tonight, Ken. Welcome to the show. Or should I say aloha?
Aloha and welcome. It's a pleasure to be on the show, Christine. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome, Ken. I just wanted to, like I said, get right into everything tonight because you have such an amazing story. You're so full of inspiration for people, and I want to cover a few things. So just to put Ken Tamplin into context for people, I know there are a lot of people listening that do know you, some don't. Give us a little bit about a background, about your childhood, and get into the things that you overcame pretty much and you know, that molded you into who you are today.
Blaze through the Reader's Digest of this, because we could spend the entire half
Absolutely.
Hour on this alone.
Oh,
so,
I know we could,
more.
And we won't.
But, you know, the long and short of it is, for all you guys out there, you know, I actually grew up in a Christian home, though my dad ran away with his secretary when I was pretty young and left my mom sort of to fend for herself. In fact, it was a very nasty sort of split up. But in the process of that, you know, us kids were a little spoiled, a little entitled. Our family, one of the family cars was a limousine, you know, the other one was a Lincoln, you know, a purple Lincoln.
Uh-huh.
You can imagine that. So we got into drugs at an early age, and it was pretty easy to steal money from my dad's, you know, wallet and go out and buy a bunch of dope. So we did, and my older brother became a drug dealer. He got sent off to prison. My sister also became a drug dealer. She ran away from home. And I actually, you know, got myself into some serious trouble. I OD'd off a drug called Angel Dust, which some of you guys might know of as cannabinol or PCP. Three times, and did a lot of LSD. I picked up my first joint when I was 6 years old because my older brother was a drug dealer, and I did my first line of cocaine when I was 9, if you can believe that. Now, today's day and age, that might not seem so young, but back in, you know, the early 70s, that was really, really young. So, and, you know, it just sort of went downhill from there. What ended up happening when I was 12 years old, I made a rocket that shot into my stomach on accident, and it blew my insides out, and they removed my spleen and part of my colon, and they told my mom I was probably not going to live. In fact, they told her, she emphatically told her that I wasn't going to live because staph infection and peritonitis had set in into my bloodstream, and it had overtaken my body, and the blood count was, you know, not so good. And she called a bunch of prayer chains to pray for me, and I was miraculously healed, actually. And that's the story, just that story alone in and of itself would take a lot of time. But, you know, God is good. And so I had a praying mom, and she continued to be by all of our sides, and all of us made it out of that, if you can believe that. My younger brother's a pastor. My other brother's an older brother's a mortgage banker now. He got out of prison. My sister is also doing well. So, you know, she has camel's knees, so to speak, and prayed it through a lot of stuff. So that's sort of the Reader's Digest version. I'm not sure how inspirational it was, but I stand here today as a result. And she just passed this past month, and unexpectedly, and that was a really very tough, I'm not going to lie, it still is very tough miss her. But I also know where she is, and I know I'm going to get to see her again. So.
Absolutely. Well, just and I appreciate, you know, and that was an excellent Reader's Digest version. For anyone that hasn't, you know, read up about Ken or his background and, you know, what happened, that was a great telling of it. But tell me, Ken, like, so what was, I would like you to elaborate more on your what I'll call your come to Jesus moment, because it was miraculous, you know,
well,
and it's very inspirational.
I think everyone really has one, and they can turn away from it or they can embrace it. It's entirely up to them. For me, I don't know that it was one specific pivotal, you know, moment in time in as much as it was a, God loved me enough to put me in what's called his divine woodshed. For those of you that don't remember that phrase, it's the good old spanking from, you know, when you did something wrong, you go out and get a tanning, as they called it. And so I, you know, found myself in a situation where when I became a drug dealer at a very young age, I owed a lot of money where I fronted drugs to other people. Other people, you know, owed me money from drugs I fronted to them. I was fronted drugs to me. So, you know, there's this sort of vicious cycle. And so it was very, very difficult. It wasn't like something you could just walk away from. It's something where you go, crap, okay, I owe all this money to these people. And what was really odd is, and as painful as this might sound, is God will use our inconvenience or even our pain, dare I say that, to bring us to a realization of just reality in and of itself, who we are as people, where we're going, but that he exists, and to ask some questions instead of just kind of going through, people call it, you know, Styx wrote the song of the grand illusion, and it is a grand illusion, but it's also the grand distraction. And so we're distracted by so many things in our life
that
we don't get, you know, a time to walk up to the mirror and introduce ourselves to ourselves and say, hey, Ken Tamplin, meet Ken Tamplin. Who is this guy, right? So, but anyway, with that said, I found myself in, because my dad viciously attacked my mom and through this divorce process, again, I was age 13 at this point, so you can imagine, you know, left me to be the man of the house with my younger brother. My sister had run away again.
Right.
My brother was in jail. And so we actually went from hotel to hotel to motel to motel until all the money ran out about a year later, where my mom, unfortunately, and there are moments in time people do have weakness in their faith, suggested we commit suicide because she had no money left.
Wow.
And she, you know, so she had this big bottle of pills, and me and my younger brother in this roach-infested motel in La Habra, California. And that in itself is a crazy story. I can't even elaborate, take the time to do that now. Long story short was CDN, Pat Robertson, Ben Kinchlow said there's a family out there watching a black and white television set, which we were, in an area called La Habra, California. They even named the city. You're thinking of killing, you know, committing suicide. Please don't do that. Call the number on your screen. Really, that's actually what happened. So we did. There was someone came and gave us a check for $50 for some groceries, and, you know, a church came alongside us, and $25 voucher for some gasoline and some other things. And it literally began the process of us pulling ourselves up in Christ by our bootstraps and figuring a way out of that mess. But because of all of the hotel hopping, it literally helped me shake off, you know, all of the people that I owed money to for drugs and that people owed me money for drugs. And I was able to completely, it's kind of like joining a gang. Like, how do you get out of the gang if you live in the neighborhood?
Right.
But if they take you out of the neighborhood, the gang doesn't know you anymore. So I guess in a way that's sort of what happened.
Right. And how blatant is that? Like the way God, like you said, how through that program with Pat Robertson that night, literally it was like it was speaking to you. I've had moments like that in my own life where you're just like, wow, those kind of affirmations where the Lord's saying, I'm here for you. You know, you just have to reach out and take my hand. And that was one of, to me, that seems like it's one of those moments where it was just kind of so in your face that he was there with you all. And like you said, from that point on, you kind of, things started to get better, evidently. I mean, from that point on, the blessings started to come, I guess.
Right, and ironically, that was the name of the program called Operation Blessing. But, we can take a couple different roads in life. We can take the road that says, you know, life has beat me up, or I've got myself into some, you know, what, addictions or whatever that is, and there's no way out. Or we have a loving, powerful, almighty creator, God, and his name is Jesus Christ, and I don't mind naming names, where
right.
When we call on his name, he can't wait. He's our daddy, and he can't wait to love on us and help us through what it is that we need to do to draw close to him and for him to give us an amazing life. Is life always been easy? Heck no. In fact, as a Christian, for me, honestly, I think trying to live in the entertainment business as a Christian and with integrity and write things that matter rather than things that are seductively, you know, whatever, unsavory or whatever, or debaucherous.
Right.
You know, if you take different roads and stuff, it can be a lot more difficult. But the rewards are phenomenal, and the inspiration that we can be to other people is eternal. And I think that matters.
Wow. Yeah, you said that so perfectly. Because it's true, especially in the entertainment industry. I mean, there's so much temptation. And I'm sure there's so many times where you've had to take the high road, you know, and maybe turn away something that would have been, in a worldly sense, lucrative, whether it be money or possessions or whatever. And maybe you've just kind of turned the other way. Was that ever the case?
Without trying to, you know, pat myself on the back, more times than you care to know, and again, more times than the show has time to allow to talk about.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know.
I bet. Yeah, because it's just all around you, you know,
right.
Obviously. So
it's all around all of us. Everyone has different sort of isms they have to go through. So.
It is, but like you said, especially in the entertainment business, it's you know, everything has its relativeness, like I think, in life. And so, but yeah, so you ended up moving on, and you started a few heavy metal Christian bands. Tell us about that point in your life, kind of getting a little bit of progression here. What was going on at that point?
Well, you asked a question, so I'll give you another condensed version of a story. There was a band I was in called Shout. And Shout had had a fairly decent measure of success. We won a couple Dove Awards and a bunch of nominations and whatever, which are, for those of you out there that don't know, it's like a gospel Grammy kind of sort of, anyway.
Right.
And at the time of Shout's first album, we were signed to a label called Frontline Records. Bad guys, by the way, Christians that were making bad choices, let's say. Okay. And they stole all of our money, and they didn't treat us right, and we paid for everything, and they owned all of our publishing and all of our music and blah, 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 blah. But going into this, we didn't know that.
Right.
And on our first album, we were making a very, very low-budget record. At the time, our contemporaries were spending close to $1 million making an album, and we were given $6,000 to make an album that we learned later would get paid back at the rate of one-tenth of 1 cent on the dollar. Some crazy thing. We'd never see a dime for, you know, whatever we sold. But anyway, but what was interesting was just prior to that, I was in another band called Joshua, and that was a semi-Christian band. The leader claimed to be a Christian, and some of the players became Christian, so it was interesting, but it was a secular band. Anyway, at that time, we were signed to this producer named Dieter Dierks, who produced a band called The Scorpions, and he kind of headed up the Monsters of Rock and all kinds of crazy festivals and stuff. Anyway, I was the singer for Joshua, and without going into detail, Joshua thought that he needed a really high-range singer, and my voice was more like my cousin Sammy Hagar. I had more of a lower-sounding range, and he wanted Mickey Thomas meets, Steve Perry, let's say, all night, and that was not me. So basically, through 4 years of working in that band, we worked really hard. We sold everything. We went to Europe. We got this producer to get involved with us. We signed a deal with the band, and this guy Joshua sort of forced me out of the band, and I was left destitute, just freaking out, going, "Oh my gosh!" I spent my entire life joining this band, doing it, getting this major record deal, which they did. With a major producer, and then all of a sudden I'm no longer in the band anymore. And so answering quick ad in a free classified ad newspaper called The Recycler, some guy says, "Hey, I want to buy your wireless system." I was hawking this because I was starving when I came off this tour. His name was Chuck King, who was in a band at the time called Idle Cure, which was signed to this label called Frontline, and joined me, or asked me to join him, to do this band called Shout. So 2 weeks into the basic tracks of Shout, Dieter Dierks calls me and says, Udo Dirkschneider has just left a very, very famous German band at the time. I don't even need to go on this. There was a famous German band that was also signed to Dieter, and said, "Would you become the lead singer? Could I interest you in that since you're no longer in Joshua?" So I flew out there. It was one of those moments, again, where you said, "Can you walk away with something?" And everything was great. They were going to offer me a car, a big tour, or this and that, or whatever. But I couldn't see myself singing songs like Balls to the Wall, you know, and whatnot.
I get
so,
it.
So I had to decline, and I came back to my little, you know, shout band album, whatever, which did blow up. It had some success.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the right choice. It ministered to a lot of people, and I would not change it for anything in the world.
Right. Well, and I understand when you then went on and formed Magdalene with Lanny Cardola, and then as we messaged earlier, which I had not known, but in doing my research for the interview tonight, realized that when you left Magdalene, Philip Bardwell replaced you on the vocals, right? And I've interviewed Philip, and
right.
I was blown away. I was like, whoa, how cool is this? You know.
Well, ironically, you mentioned about the project that I did in Sudan, which we got George Bush to sign a $300 million peace act to stop the carnage that was gone way before anybody ever heard of Darfur or all the other stuff,
uh-huh.
that whatever. Well, his brother, who's actually a pastor also, his name's Habib, wrote the title
yes.
track for that album called Make Me Your Voice. So, like
oh,
you said,
nice.
Third degree, 3 degrees of separation, it's more like 1 degree of separation. So.
Yeah, and Philip is just such a cool guy. I ended up speaking with him today and letting him know that, you know, we were going to be, you know, chatting tonight. I said, hey, you know, if you're interested, you know, listen in. But,
cool.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And y'all were doing so many great things back then with the with that project, like you said, for the genocide that was going on back at that time. And still it's crazy. But yeah, I want to go ahead. I want, you know, I know we don't have much time, but kind of going to get right into here that you do you do have the Ken Tamplin Vocal Academy, and obviously you're an amazing vocal coach. You've got this four octave range voice. It's amazing. And I want to go ahead. We're going to talk a little bit more about the academy and the voice lessons, but I want to go ahead and play one of your songs so everybody can get a little taste of what you sound like. So let's go ahead now. And you did send me a few to choose from, and I chose Some Kind of Wonderful by Graham Funk Railroad. So we're going to go ahead and listen to that now. This is Ken Tamplin with Some Kind of Wonderful.
I don't have to stay.
Talking about my baby. I love that so much. That reminds me of my roller skating days a long time ago. So, like we kind of discussed previously. Okay,
we're giving away our age.
I was born. That's right.
People are going to start to think of John Travolta and Olivia Neutron bomb.
Oh, gosh. Don't even go there. Okay, speaking of that, no, well, I wanted to say that, okay, so you have this great range, and I know, like, there are a lot of, Whitney Houston and some of these, I don't know, Mariah Carey may have a 5-octave, I don't know, you've just got a great range, and obviously, so you've got Ken Tamplin Vocal Academy. I looked at all of these YouTube videos that you've got. I mean, you do everything from the Bee Gees, Lonely Days, Lonely Nights, Debbie Gray's Drift Away. I love that song. But tell us a little bit about the Vocal Academy, how that started, how long it's been been around.
The first thing is as you know, I've toured the world for 30 years. And
yes.
I've spent over $1 million on my voice. And I've studied under some of the world's greatest vocal coaches. And that includes Leonie Maggiore, who taught Luciano Pavarotti for over 50 years. It includes Ron Anderson, who was the premier vocal coach for American Idol for all the years it was running. Like lots and lots of money and lots of time on my voice. And over the years, I've had to train all the the band members to sing all those crazy harmonies to songs like what you just now heard.
Right.
To keep them from losing their voice for all of these years. And about 10 years ago, a buddy of mine who was a very well-known person, I try not to drop people's names because they may not want other people to know they're taking vocal lessons, so I try to be judicious
right.
about that. But anyway, and so they said, you helped me so much, you know, you really should start an academy and help other entertainers that are having vocal trouble because you have so much working knowledge and you yourself can sing great and other vocal coaches can't sing. And so I thought, you know, he has a point. So I put up a YouTube video of me just doing this crazy blues lick, and it, bam, got over 1 million views. It went viral. And I thought, okay,
wow.
You know, this is something cool. I think I could do this. I'm kind of on a mission, and I know this sounds crazy, but I'm on a mission because as I look into a good chunk of most of the vocal coaches out there, I learned that they may have some textbook knowledge of the voice, and some do, and that may or may not be applicable depending on your singing style, but that they can't sing themselves, and they show no students singing. And the last time I checked, when I wanted to go learn how to play baseball or piano or guitar or become a brain surgeon, someone had to physically demonstrate and show me how to do it. And in this case, not only can they not do it themselves, but they demonstrate no students doing it, which was very, very fishy. And the more I learned and the more I got into this, I realized, wow, there's a lot of chicanery and smoke and mirrors going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to set the record straight and just our slogan is the proof is in the singing. So when you said videos, we actually have like 370 videos that take on the world's most epic pieces of all time. So
and
it's not
do.
About just a song here and there. It's about taking on the most epic, an artist in their prime and their prime of life with their greatest hit. Me and my students take them on one at a time to prove that the proof is in the singing. So that's what I teach.
Right. And so, and like you said, you do put up, like on your Ken Tamplin Vocal Academy, the website, on your Facebook page, you actually have videos of the students, you know. And what I love about your technique, and at least, you know, what you're putting out there right now is that, you know, you let the student sing the song or you sing the song, and then there's always a follow-up to it. Or maybe you do that in the opposite, you know, order. But, you know, you sing it and then you critique it and you talk about the technique. And it just seems very, very, is something that's very, I mean, that's not simple, but you know what I mean, the way you're explaining it and portraying
right. I want
people
to see that these people are real. By the way, and on YouTube, it's in the reverse. We'll do the demonstration first, and they see the tutorial of how we got there. But on YouTube, you need to hit them hard with something that they're going to be excited about first. So they can actually see the result, kind of like Dancing with the Stars or something, and then they show, you know, how they got to that dance move. So in the same way, I did that sort of approach with the singing part. But yeah, so they get to see an artist like Gabriela Gunčíková, who went from a small village in the Czech Republic all the way to, you know, taking second place in Czech Idol, which is called Superstar, me helping her get the lead vocal position for Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and then becoming a finalist for Eurovision. And they get to see the process of that, and it's stunning.
Right.
You're just like, wow, that's the real deal. You have to work at it. It's hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't.
Yes.
It didn't fall in her lap. She may have had a talent.
Right.
That's true. But it was earned.
So what would you say, what's the number one mistake that most vocalists make as far as it pertains to like maintaining the longevity of their voice?
That they think they're all that and they don't need to practice.
Okay.
You know, a guitar player walks in, you know, with an amp and a lot of history of how many hours he put into it. A singer walks into the microphone at best and complains. So, you know, that there's a process by which an understanding of the anatomy and the physiological aspects of what it takes to be a great singer, they apply.
Right.
And I'm not saying that there aren't gifted people where they can walk up, open their mouth, and something cool comes out. But over time, you lose that. And if you don't know how to maintain it, you'll lose it. And we've seen that from pretty much every single last one of maybe our favorite people from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And, you know, so.
What do you think about, okay, so I absolutely love, okay, Engelbert Humperdinck and Tony Bennett. I also love Frankie Valli. And when I think about, I put in my notes here with Engelbert and Tony, wow, they still sound amazing. Their voices are still strong. They're still holding those long notes. They still have that power. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
Well, and I've actually, believe it or not, I've seen almost all three of them live not that long ago here in the last couple, 3 years, if you believe that.
I'm jealous.
Well, what happened, it's a long story. Anyway, but I'm going to use Frankie Valli as an example. Now, he actually did study voice early on, and it doesn't really sing that heavy, and he still sounded great, man. I couldn't believe for his age. Wow. Engelbert Humperdinck has an operatic background, so that's not really fair because he did study opera early on, so he has a very, what's called bel canto or arpeggio background. And Tony Bennett, you know, he's got that Frank Sinatra thing that, you know, even Frank didn't lose towards the end. He's just cool. So I'm not saying there aren't exceptions like Tony, like Frank, that, you know, have that, you know, that swagger. In the end, things that are truly demanding and truly challenging are, if you look at Placido or you look at there's all kinds of, you know, from Caruso on, these guys train for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week. They'd warm up for 2 solid hours before going out and singing a two-hour aria. So, you know, there's a whole different level of, depending on what you're looking at, from an actual, let's call it a vocal calisthenic or, you know, being vocal athletes sort of perspective. So those guys are hanging notes. They're not hanging high notes. They're hanging notes well within what's called the vocal FACH, F-A-C-H, which means stipe or your range, your capacity. So, So, but anyway, but there are a couple people out there that can still, you know, do that, which is awesome. But there's an awful lot of them. Tom Jones, I loved him, and he has an opera background, but he's lost a lot of his range. And if you're looking at that era, you know,
Yeah, I love that. Well, hey, look, we are getting close to our 30 minutes here. I know it goes so fast. I definitely want to bring you back at some other point to you know, just continue our conversation. You know, because honestly, we just touched the tip of the iceberg. I know you gave us all the condensed version, but you really are an inspiration. You're an inspiration. You're using your gifts for the Lord. And like you said, you're not afraid to name names. I'm not afraid to name names either. And so, you know, I give all praise and glory to the Lord, and anybody that knows me knows that. So I just really appreciate you, you know, taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're very, very busy.
I'm sorry I couldn't do more than 30 minutes, but next time I promise we could do an hour or more if you want. We'll figure that out.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Well, one thing I did want to say too, and I know you mentioned that your mom passed away, you know, very recently, and I wanted to pay my respects to her because, obviously, she was a strong woman. She was an overcomer. She was a prayer warrior, and in a lot of respects, you know, if it wasn't for her and carrying you all as long as she did, you know, I wouldn't be here speaking with you tonight. So I thank her, and I know, like you said, you're going to see her again, you know, someday, and that. You know, kind of makes things better when you're trying to get through those hard times. So I just wanted to do that.
If I can contribute to that, I would suggest if there's any moms out there in the earshot of my voice, that if you think of giving up on your kids or you think they'll never change, thank God my mom didn't do that to any one of us because we all came to a conversion at a different point in our lives and my brother much later. But we all did, you know, raise a child in the way they're young and then in the end they won't depart from the faith. And so she, because of her steadfastness over time, before she passed, got to see all of her kids come to a saving knowledge of Christ. So I think that's a very important thing for you out there. If you feel like giving up on someone that you've been praying for or talking to or working with or family member or, you know, whatever, don't give up. Don't give up.
Don't give up. Okay, great. What a great note to leave that on. Okay, Cam, well, thanks so much, and thanks again for being here, and we will keep in touch, okay?
Okay, my pleasure. Awesome time. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, please be sure to check out Ken's vocal courses at www.kentamplinvocalacademy.com. You can also follow Ken on Facebook, Twitter, and on YouTube. And that wraps up of soul-inspiring music, magic, and message. Please tune in next week when I'll be bringing a very special program to the show. We have something special, a plan honoring the Gospel Music Association Dove Awards that Team Atlanta Life Radio will be attending in just a few weeks. So on behalf of the entire Atlanta Life Radio team, I'm your host, Christine Kiefsi, reminding you that this broadcast of Soul Inspiration Show will be available as a podcast on AtlantaLifeRadio.com, the Atlanta Life Radio iTunes channel, and on the Stitcher app. Remember, when you listen to a Soul Inspiration Show, you're not only supporting the guests, but all musicians whose melodies create the musical landscape of our lives. It's what I call living your life in the key of C.